Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Till the Last Breath by Martha Carr and Michael Anderle, narrated by Amanda Friday. Chapter 1.
How the hell did we end up here?
Specialist Emily Trigger stood with Hellion Squadron's eclectically elite six-person Prodigal Sons team. They were in the living room of the shabby, run-down, partially rotted apartment Sergeant Boyd had finally rented for them in Izmir, Turkey. All six operators stood in a half circle around the wobbly, crooked wooden chair in the middle of the room. An unconscious, middle-aged Turkish man, dressed in the full standard-issue uniform of a local Turkish police officer, sat on it. No one said a word. They'd stood here for 10 minutes after tying the man to the crooked wooden chair with handfuls of dead wiring Stryker had previously stripped from the walls to repurpose for something else. At the time, the knife-fingered operator hadn't any idea what he would use these wires for. Now they were all the team had to secure the lone survivor from among the three attackers who had attempted a break-in to get their hands on Emily no more than half an hour before. At least, she assumed that was what the men came here to do. Each one had headed for her after climbing the four-story apartment building and emerging on the rooftop balcony outside the Prodigal Son's half a living room. Each attacker had leveled a weapon at Emily. All of them had drawn their service pistols with the clear intent to fire, possibly maim, and most likely subdue the unit's only specialist. The one part of this otherwise ridiculous equation that made the least sense was why these three police officers had come to the Prodigal Son's dismal apartment. That included why it had taken multiple thrown daggers, multiple fired rounds, and multiple blasts of Emily's new crackling yellow magic she still hadn't figured out how to control to take down all three assailants. Slightly less confusing, but no less important, was the question of who the hell had sent these men after her and the rest of the team. The Sons had been lying low as efficiently as possible during their indeterminate stay in Izmir. Both of these things were less freaky than trying to figure out how three grown men in full law enforcement uniforms with loaded handguns had climbed the building's exterior walls without any handholds or footholds. That still wasn't the worst part. The worst part was that the man tied to the wooden chair was the only one of the three who hadn't been repeatedly stabbed or shot, making him the only one who was still alive and potentially coherent enough to withstand a Prodigal Son's interrogation, assuming he ever woke up.
"Well, this is a whole lot of useful, isn't it?"
Stryker murmured as he folded his arms, moving casually but carefully, with the lifelong practice of ensuring his deadly sharp fingers didn't catch on any part of his long-sleeved civvy shirt or the flesh beneath it. The rest of the team glanced at him, but nobody had a response for a remarkably obvious sentiment among the entire unit. Yes, they'd caught one of their assailants. Yes, they'd tied the guy to an actual chair that so far worked the way a chair should, in this apartment where nothing else worked. Yes, the man was still unconscious and would hopefully come to soon, preferably with some semblance of his motor functions, plus the ability to understand his interrogators and create coherent sentences and responses still relatively intact. Nothing else had been resolved for the Prodigal Sons thus far, except that they were all still alive. Still, that was only a guarantee for one present moment after the next, because nothing about this mission had turned out the way it was supposed to either. From the start, nothing about this mission had been predictable or realistic, in the most literal definition of both terms.
"Should we throw some fucking water on him or something?"
Gonzalez raised an eyebrow. Robin scoffed. "Yeah, that'll do it. The guy who went down before his buddies and stayed down the whole time during a full-on firefight on the rooftop is gonna wake right up with a little water. Makes perfect sense."
"Trigger?" Nelson called.
Emily pulled her gaze away from the Turkish police officer, who couldn't have been an actual officer, and turned her head toward the medic with a questioning frown. He nodded at her,
then gestured vaguely toward the DIY tourniquet of stripped electrical cords they'd found lying around the house. That had given Stryker the idea to rip more from the walls to use, instead of ropes for tying their prisoner to the chair. So far, the two sets of cables performed perfectly for both functions.
"Come over here. I want to get a better look at that thing."
Emily tried to smirk, but it probably looked more like a grimace.
"Just a look? Or are you trying to touch it, too?"
His shoulders slumped in exasperation as Nelson widened his eyes at her, because she already knew the answer. After a short groan, Emily gestured at her leg.
"I can tell you right now, man, there's no exit wound. Bullet didn't technically enter in the first place, if we're getting into the details. It's more of a flesh wound."
Some operators snickered, but no one, especially Staff Sergeant Boyd, fully removed their attention from the trussed-up intruder in the middle of their living room. He was the only one who looked like he hadn't heard the other brief and mostly unimportant conversation between the rest of his team.
"Come on,"
Nelson repeated, wiggling his finger at her as he turned away from the team's half-circle to head for his medkit, sitting with the rest of his things along the living room wall.
"You know the drill, Trigger. I'm not letting that go, especially with your track record of injuries on this mission."
Emily's fingers automatically went to the side of her face. The scars from her battle with the Black Caiman in the Amazon were only now regaining some of their original sensation, although it probably wouldn't return in full.
"What are you talking about?"
she asked jokingly, her voice dipping into a low mock seriousness.
"I think this makes me look badass. You know, only if you look real closely. It's hardly noticeable in passing."
The others snorted and tried to hold back their waning fits of tense laughter. Finally, Boyd had to engage with such useless conversation to move things along, although he kept his gaze squarely focused on their unexpected prisoner.
"Cut the bullshit, Trigger," he muttered. "You heard our medic. Now let him do his job so the rest of us can keep doing ours."
"All right, Sergeant."
Emily sighed as she shook her head and stepped away from the semicircle of operators to join Nelson on the other side of the room.
"I'm doing it for you, remember. Only for you."
Boyd clicked his tongue.
"Golly, I'm fucking touched."
The other four members of her new unit stayed where they were, watching the trussed-up intruder, while Emily joined Nelson and agreed to be his magical medical guinea pig again. As he cut through the thigh of her loose jeans with a pair of scissors from his medkit to get to her gunshot wound, Nelson muttered,
"You forgot the bite."
From her seat on the floor, Emily pretended she wasn't upset about this pair of jeans she'd picked up from a local market and had grown somewhat attached to since then. She looked at the medic with another half-smile that held far more amusement.
"Hey, man, if that's your thing, totally cool. Everybody's got their own whatever. Just don't fucking ask me to do it."
Nelson's dark eyes flickered away from their prisoner to land on her exposed leg. He frowned at her before the meaning of yet another one of Specialist Trigger's jokes fully sank in.
"I'm not talking about me, asshole. The cat snake bite? It wasn't only your face I've already had to patch up."
"Oh." Emily clicked her tongue. "Yeah, that too." He added,
"At this rate, I should stand next to you the whole fucking time. We can maximize efficiency by instant healing instead of having to call you the hell over every time and try to convince you that what I can do for you is necessary to keep living and shit."
"Thank you very much, Doctor. I'll keep that in mind." While Nelson pulled out the rest of the supplies he assumed he would need to tend to Emily's latest injury, she only half paid attention to his ministrations. The other half of her focus was on the continuing conversation among their team members. Over a month ago, she would have assumed that removing herself from most of the team was the catalyst for their ability to open up the second she was gone. Now Emily knew how self-absorbed she'd been at the beginning of this mission, thinking pretty much everything the operators did, or said, had anything to do with her. They continued the conversation because they could, and there was nothing else to do at this point. Whether Specialist Emily Trigger was a part of it didn't matter, and most likely hadn't crossed any of their minds.
"What do we have on this guy, huh?"
Boyd folded his arms and continued to scowl at the prisoner.
"We get an ID? Any other determining information? Anything?
Gonzalez nodded, then reached into the back pocket of his jeans to pull out a thin, worn, incredibly faded wallet.
Only other thing on him was this. He's got an ID in there, personal and professional. He's law enforcement, no question about it.
The big guy handed the wallet over to his team leader and shrugged.
That's it.
Boyd flipped open the wallet, inspected its meager contents, then pursed his lips in frustration and tossed the whole thing toward the officer's feet.
Well, that doesn't tell us shit we didn't already know. Someone needs to come up with something else for me, and preferably before this piece of shit comes too.
Robbins inhaled deeply through her nose, closed her eyes, and turned both palms outward toward the prisoner in question. For a moment, Emily thought the silver-eyed woman was going to try her darkness-sucking spell. It wasn't anything as complicated or allegedly impressive. Robbins merely stood there like that for a moment, completely motionless, as if she were communicating with some other force in the living room that no one else could see, hear, or smell.
Yeah, great. That's exactly what we need. Another presence we can't see, pin down, or fight. Wouldn't be that much of a surprise at this point.
Finally, Robbins let out a long sigh through parted lips, grunted, and shook her head.
Something inside this guy isn't supposed to be there. It feels almost exactly like...
Ah, fuck! Emily shouted, her attention and decision to remain silent on the sidelines shredded by the agonizing heat of Nelson's cauterizing magic flaring into the wound in her thigh. He had grabbed it with both red-orange glowing hands without giving her a heads up. The rest of the team all turned to eye her with some surprise, but mostly indignation at the fact that she couldn't keep her expression of pain to herself. Nelson merely squeezed down harder on her thigh with both hands in response. Emily grimaced, cleared her throat, and muttered,
"Don't worry about it, guys. Don't mind me. I'm just over here being fucking fried again."
Surprisingly, the other operators listened to her this time. They immediately ignored her before returning their attention to the matter at hand, or the one that didn't have anything to do with their medic laying down more second-degree burns on Emily's skin, which was now starting to look like a patchwork of impressionist living artwork attempts gone horribly wrong. Boyd jerked his chin up at Robbins and prompted,
"Feels almost exactly like..."
Robbins shrugged, then glanced at each individual in their semicircle before finishing her thought.
"Feels almost exactly like the energy in all the victims of Vampur. All the civilians hecka, you know, touched."
She finished that statement with a grimace of distaste at the reminder of the horrible magic they faced in this mission's enemy target. Or perhaps it was the more precise and unsettling memory of what all that dark energy had felt like in the magically zombified victims the team had found in the village of Vampur. Stryker echoed her grimace as he stared at her, half in disbelief and half in frustrated confusion. He bit his bottom lip even further, exposing his upper teeth in a snarl.
"That doesn't make any fucking sense."
"Yeah, tell me about it."
Robbins gestured with a flippant wave toward the officer tied up in the chair.
"That's what I'm getting here, dude. If you got another way of sampling what this motherfucker feels like on the inside, by all means, have at it."
The operator lifted both hands in concession and shook his head.
"Nah, I'm good. I trust you. We all know you know what you're doing with whatever the hell that creepy shit is you do. I'm just saying, it doesn't make any fucking sense."
Gonzalez heaved a sigh and scratched his cheek.
"Is that even possible? I mean, the magic that Hecka stuck into those civilians in Vampur made them all lifeless, empty zombie shells, right? They stood there staring at nothing, saying nothing, hearing nothing. We couldn't get them to respond or make a sound. Probably wouldn't have been able to even if one of them had gotten shot."
"Huh, yeah, Trigger made a hell of a lot more noise."
Emily glared at the guy, while Nelson finished applying whatever ointment he felt was necessary for magically cauterized wounds before he focused on the bandages he wanted to wrap around her leg.
"Real sweet," she retorted with a sarcastic sneer.
"I'm flattered."
"Don't be."
"We're calling this guy another of Hecka's victims, then?"
Boyd asked. The skepticism in his voice was clear before any of his operators came up with a response.
Sounds like bullshit to me,
Gonzalez countered. Robbins folded her arms. Sounds like bullshit to me, too, and I'm the one who said it.
Boyd centered his gaze on the silver-eyed operator for 2 seconds before switching his attention back to their prisoner.
Explain that one for me.
I mean, yeah, it's the same energy.
Robbins scrunched up her face as she tried to put into words what only she could feel, thanks to her unique set of skills and magical abilities.
The only difference is all the other civilians with the same kind of energy inside them were exactly like what Gonzalez said. A bunch of standing vegetables barely still breathing. This fucking guy climbed up the side of the building with his buddies before opening fire on a bunch of strangers they'd never seen before and couldn't have known were staying here.
She rolled her eyes in a slow arc to gaze around the dilapidated living room, then snorted.
Seriously, who the fuck else would want to live in a place like this unless they absolutely had to?
I don't know, man.
Stryker gazed around the apartment with the tiniest flicker of a smile at the corner of his mouth.
Place feels kind of cozy to me.
She shot him a dirty look.
Yeah, it fucking would, wouldn't it?
All right, Boyd cut in. We have no idea what makes this guy different from the civilians in the Amazon, Polkigron, or wherever else we've seen people left over after this bastard god of magic rolled through. Then let's talk about what makes this guy different from the other two who showed up with him.
It's not like we can grab him and bring him up for a quick compare and contrast, Sergeant.
Stryker swung his arm toward the rooftop patio beyond the tarp. He meant to include a decent amount of space beyond the apartment building with that jarring movement.
You're the one who told us to get rid of the bodies. It was great to find out that we're really fucking good at getting rid of the bodies, but it's a little too late to change your mind.
I didn't change my mind,
Boyd blandly replied. Then his eyes narrowed, and he tilted his head to study their prisoner further.
What I don't get is how come this one's still alive, and the other two are actually dead.
Emily looked up from the chipped wooden floorboard she'd been studying to ignore the rest of Nelson's super annoying work on repairing her thigh, as much as it would ever be repaired. She scanned the other four operators and replied without thinking. He is the one who never got shot or stabbed. Boyd faced her, partially turning his back toward their prisoner for the first time since the uninvited man had appeared in the team's apartment. His frown deepened within the room's building tension.
Then how did he end up downed?
Yes, she knew her team leader was talking about when he stepped through the tarp to find a surprising and fun-filled scene on the rooftop patio. This officer had been lying motionless, while two others were already getting back to their feet after receiving a thrown knife to the chest or throat from Stryker. Boyd had been the first to fire a shot, although it was admittedly in self-defense and the defense of his operators. Still, it might have looked weird that only one of their midnight assailants had gone down and stayed down during that confusing altercation. Emily knew why the guy had stayed down, or at least she thought she knew. The only relevant variable here was that she had blasted an enormous and unintended burst of her crackling yellow magic after attempting to disarm him of his drawn weapon. Instead, she'd electrocuted the hell out of him and sent him crumpling before his comrades could enact the rest of their plan. It had started as an ambush aimed at Emily and possibly the other prodigal sons, but there was no way to know the assailant's true intentions or why. Now that Boyd was staring at her, the rest of the team had taken it as a cue to turn their scrutinizing gazes onto the prodigal son's only specialist. Robbins, Stryker, and Gonzalez looked at Emily with various expressions of disbelief, irritation, and expectation. Nelson tied off the last bandage around her thigh, slapped both hands into his lap, sagged against the wall beside her, and fixed her with the same kind of skeptical stare. Emily had to say something. She went with the first thing that came to mind and offered an absent shrug as she looked from one pair of eyes to the next.
I don't fucking know.
She fully expected at least one, if not all, of the other unit members to spout off an argument about how everyone could tell Emily Trigger was full of shit right now. That had almost happened more than once throughout this mission. It had already happened with a few implicit inferences, or not quite subtle attempts to accuse her of something. Fortunately for her, no one questioned her latest statement. No one could know that Emily had lied through her teeth by saying she had no idea what was different about this sole surviving intruder. However, Robbins, Gonzalez, and Stryker all stared at her like she'd done something heinously awful and royally fucked up. Each had witnessed a small portion of the electric yellow magical energy she'd had blasted into her a few months before, which she had since dubbed Lil Sparky. In one way or another, they had seen those flashes of yellow light and whatever effect they'd had on the given situation. Still, Emily was fairly certain none had yet put all the pieces together. This meant she still had time before someone figured out she couldn't control her new ability, or that the yellow sparks and crackling lines of energy that flowed out of her with more voltage than the newest taser model were part of her magic in the first place. If she had to guess, Emily would have said the skepticism on all three operators' faces looked a whole hell of a lot like each knew something was up, that they knew she'd been hiding something from the rest of the team, maybe not since the beginning of their mission together during Operation Lazarus, but over the last few weeks. Even then, none of them felt like now was an appropriate time to question her. No, if now was the appropriate time to question anyone, it was the police officer, with a bunch of stripped wires binding his arms at his sides and tying his wrists and ankles to the armrests and chair legs. As long as he regained consciousness and wasn't a brain-dead vegetable with the same corruption Hekka had given the civilians of Ampur and Pokégron.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to tell somebody something eventually, aren't I?
Okay.
Boyd looked back and forth between Emily and all the other operators, as if he suspected all five prodigal sons under his leadership had agreed on a messed-up little secret among them that they needed to keep from him at all costs.
I feel like I'm missing something right now.
Join the club,
Robbins added, without looking away from Emily.
I'm still waiting for someone to tell me what I missed, too.
Stryker raised an eyebrow, then rolled his eyes and faced the prisoner. Gonzalez stared at Emily longer than anyone else. He looked more like someone who desperately wanted to make himself available for a sudden, unexpected, but necessary confession to burst from the mouth of whoever needed to make it. Right now, he thought that person was Emily. She wasn't going to budge. Not now.
Uh-huh.
Sergeant Boyd stroked his chin, then turned toward the prisoner.
Something tells me this unit needs a little bit of...
He didn't get to finish the thought, which Emily was grateful for. She was not thankful that what had interrupted her team leader in the middle of his next alleged proposition was their captive finally coming to. The tightened wires and rickety chair on the verge of falling apart all groaned and creaked under the man's increasingly urgent movements as his awareness returned and he struggled against his bonds.
Well, shit,
Nelson muttered, without attempting to get up from where he slumped against the wall.
Look at that,
Stryker added with a little chuckle. Gonzalez snickered.
Someone's ears were burning, huh?
Robbins folded her arms and glared at the officer.
This might be the first time I've ever been glad that a piece of shit like this isn't dead.
Emily snorted. I'm the one he drew a weapon on.
Like that makes a fucking difference. Come on. How do you want us to keep going with this one?
Stryker opened one of his hands with a metallic clink of his fingers brushing against each other. Then he extended his arm toward their prisoner so the man could more easily see the deadly sharp tips of the blades that could never be hidden, retracted, or detached from Stryker's hand.
I could probably come up with a few good ways to start making him talk.
One of his knives glinted in the dim light of the insufficient bulb dangling from the ceiling. Sergeant Boyd took a single step forward toward the prisoner tied up in the chair and clasped his hands behind his back.
Why don't we save that option for a little later in the process? For now, let's see what this asshole comes up with all on his own first.
Chapter 2
All right, officer.
Staff Sergeant Boyd glanced down at the closed wallet he'd tossed at the prisoner's feet.
Akbash,
Gonzalez murmured, with a quick nod toward the wallet.
I think.
Akbash, Boyd continued. At the sound of his last name, the officer's eyelids fluttered open, and he settled his gaze on the team leader for a few seconds before his eyes briefly rolled up. Boyd took this as a sign of recognition, and maybe consent, for continuing this part of their interrogation.
Time to hear it all straight from the horse's mouth, huh? You speak English?
The prisoner's derisive snort, when he settled his gaze back onto Boyd's face, seemed to be answer enough, although he still hadn't uttered a word.
Yeah, Stryker confirmed with a slow nod. He fucking understands us just fine. Then let's have us a little chat, shall we?
Boyd took another step toward the prisoner, before squaring his boots toward the chair. He was 3 feet in front of the previously unconscious intruder, who was returning to himself, hopefully with all his senses and mental faculties intact. Emily quietly hoped that would happen, because she didn't have any other previous experiences with which to compare the unknown and unintended effects of having electrocuted someone she'd only meant to disarm with her hands, and not electric jolts from Lil Sparky.
Who are you?
Sergeant Boyd spoke slowly and clearly enough that it would be impossible for someone who also spoke English to misunderstand a single word.
I see your ID in your wallet, says Officer Emir Akbash. But I'm guessing you probably go by something else these days, huh?
The Turkish officer said nothing, but his dark eyes had finally stopped rolling, and he looked more capable of focusing on his interrogator's face. A hint of malice and underlying aggression showed behind his gaze, which only made the prodigal sons that much more grateful that they decided to tie him up while he was unconscious. When the man still said nothing, Sergeant Boyd switched to a different tactic.
All right. Maybe we'll come around to talking about you later. Why don't we have a few words about your buddies instead? The other two men who climbed up over the roof with you tonight? I'm sure I don't have to explain to you that this is a private property and we're all legal renters of this beautiful apartment you see around you. Temporarily. For now, this is our home. I want to know why 3 local law enforcement officers felt compelled to climb the side of the building to our roof and trespass without a warrant, without probable cause of any kind, and without a fucking invitation.
Akbash inhaled a deep breath through his nose, like he was about to say something. Then he sighed and looked remarkably like a frustrated teenager whose only joy in life came from exasperating every other adult around him with whom he came into contact. If Boyd's time as the prodigal son's team leader had taught him anything, it was the invaluable and beneficial skill of amassing an almost never-ending supply of patience. This wasn't exactly like dealing with his 5 operators, bickering and bantering at all hours, especially when they'd had next to nothing to do since the start of Operation Lazarus. Still, if anyone was suited for interrogating someone who might have been the most dangerous threat the team had faced so far, excluding Hekka himself, Sergeant Boyd was it. He didn't move a muscle as he stood in front of their attacker-turned-prisoner with his hands clasped behind his back and his chin lowered enough to look squarely down at Officer Akbash. It probably helped that the rest of the team remained motionless as well. Robbins, Stryker, and Gonzalez had formed a partial arc behind Boyd and posed an intimidating sight. Emily and Nelson sat against the living room's far wall. Despite this, the duo still added a level of threatening imposition to the pervading mood in the room. All they had to do was fix their warning stares on the man. So far, despite being the focus of 6 pairs of eyes, Akbash hadn't looked away from Staff Sergeant Boyd as he collected himself into something worthy of his status as local law enforcement. Yes, he'd proven himself part of the small fraction of law enforcement who also had several felonies under his belt, but that didn't matter much to him. Boyd continued.
Unfortunately, we didn't have the same luck with IDing your 2 other pals who followed you. Now,
I can't say one way or the other that you being the first guy up and over the wall onto our...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?